Mitzvah Pei Tes, the 89th mitzvah, Shelo Nishkotze HaPesach Ve'arba Asar Benisan Be'od Shachometz Birshusenu, that we should not slaughter the Paschal offering on the 14th of Nisan, which is, of course, the proper day to slaughter the Pesach offering. Be'od Shachometz Birshusenu, as long as we have chometz in our possession. So even though you could say they're not intrinsically connected somehow, they're two separate mitzvahs, we still have an additional prohibition right now. You're not allowed to shecht the korban until you've gotten rid of all your chametz. We have to get rid of all our chametz. We have to make sure all our chametz is gotten rid of before we shecht the korban Pesach. We know that midaraisa, the time for getting rid of chametz and the time for that you're not allowed to eat chametz anymore is the sixth hour of this, the beginning of the seventh hour of the day, which is halfway through the day, chatzos hayom. Kamo shadarshu zichronim levracha, ach chilek. We have a drasha where it says, ach vayom arishon tashbisu sori batechem, that only on the first day shall you get rid yourselves of all sourdough. So what does that mean? If not the first day of Pesach, the Chazal interpret that it means the day before Pesach. Yom arishon means not the first day, but the previous day. So, but since it says ach only, we have an assumption usually that the word ach implies a miut. You don't; it's not the entirety of the thing that the ach is describing, but rather it's the half of the a certain part of it. Only it limits the scope of the prohibition that it's talking about. So here we learn out that this means that you're not allowed to have chametz and eat chametz, etc. from the second half of the day before what we call Pesach, which is the 14th of Nisan. Shenemar lo tizbach al chametz dam zivchi, you shall not slaughter on chametz the blood of my sacrifice. Uva perushbo lo sishchat se'a Pesach v'yadayin chametz kaim birshusach. And the received interpretation is that you should not slaughter the Paschal offering and while chametz is still included, you still have chametz in your possession. And even though it's an independent mitzvah, you're not allowed to have chametz in your possession at that time, because it's during the second half of the day of the 14th of Nisan, there's an additional prohibition. It gives an additional severity to have chametz while you're slaughtering the Korban Pesach. There's another place in the Torah, just a couple of parshas away. Again, same. So it's not allowed to. You're not allowed. Again, same thing. You're not allowed to have chametz when you slaughter the korban Pesach. So not just the person who owns the korban Pesach, but not also shouldn't be the person who slaughters the offering. And the Kohen who sprinkles the blood, and who puts the fats on the altar, and also not one of the chabura, the people who are going to eat that Korban Pesach the subsequent night, none of those people who are involved in the preparation and the consumption of this Korban Pesach, they all violate this mitzvah of slaughtering the Pesach when they have chametz in their possession if they do that. If they have chametz in their possession after the while they slaughter the offering, mishor she'a mitzvah. So what's the reasoning behind the mitzvah? L'fi shekvius man b'chol inyanim hu kiyum asiyasan, because the set time for things is the main thing that establishes their doing. So this is yekishism in hatorah minayin. So how do we know that we have to be yekish? We have to be very concerned about timing. So this is this tells you that yadua. So this is known, everybody knows that you're supposed to be careful about time. Many Jews nowadays don't seem to know this. Okay. So certainly this should apply to the Korban Pesach, which is a very major principle of our religion. It's one of the major marks of God's relationship with us. He took us out of Egypt, etc. So the Pesach is one of the major remembrances of that. So Kemoshik Asayim Lomala, as we heard many times, of course, when we were learning the specific laws about the Korban Pesach, so Tzivak El Baruch Hu Shanase Inyano Beseder V'Kviyos Man L'chol Davar Adavar Midvarav, that everything involved in the Korban Pesach should go in progression of the proper timing. So first you have to get rid of your chametz, then you have to do the Korban Pesach, and not the opposite. So none of the mitzvos of this entire holiday should encroach upon another. First, we have to get rid of the chametz, which is interesting. He describes the chametz as being temporarily disgusting. So the way, people are mekayim this, that we really right before Pesach, when you sort of start to review chametz with a revulsion, not only just a sort of intellectual thing, oh, we're not allowed to eat this now, but it's a sort of a visceral reaction to it. So you can ask any Jewish, maybe anachronistic to say housewife, maybe that's the olden days, but house person, how... Anybody who's dealing with the getting rid of chametz from the house, you know, there's a visceral reaction to it. So that's proper. Animus beinenu l'shaito. That's temporarily disgusting. So once you've done that, once you've gotten rid of this disgusting chametz, then you can start with the joy of the holiday, which is starting with the korban Pesach. But it would be improper to do it in reverse order. V'odim shamanu tov mizeh nachzik bo. He says, but if you tell me a better reason, I'll be happy to to hear that also again. But the Shorshei HaMitzvah is sort of groping for something, but it's not, the Shorshei HaMitzvah are not absolute things that are not subject to disagreement or improvement. In the footnotes of Rabbi Shevel's edition of the Sefer HaChinuch, he brings Rav Hirsch. He says maybe the Sefer HaChinuch would have liked Rav Hirsch. So Rav Hirsch gives an explanation, his own Shorshei HaMitzvah for this prohibition, which is that chametz, of course, represents gaiva, represents material comforts, represents haughtiness, and the Korban Pesach represents our submission to the will of God, and is not for our own personal benefit. So if you still have chametz at home, and you're doing the... In other words, on Pesach, on these types of things, your home has to be equivalent to your service in the Beis HaMikdash. You can't have a disparate view of the two areas. Your home has to be holy, your home has to be prepared for the holiday, and your service in the Beis HaMikdash has to be preparing for the holiday. So if you have a disconnect between your home and your service in the Beis HaMikdash, so that would be improper. So maybe the Sefer HaChinuch would have liked that better. I don't know. Midinei HaMitzvah, the lochos of the mitzvah, Masha Amrush, is man shchitosu achar chatzos, that the time of shechting the Korban Pesach is after chatzos. V'imshchato kodim chatzos shepasol. It's absolutely possible if you shecht it before chatzos. Again, before after chatzos, you have an independent mitzvah to get rid of the chametz that's not connected to the Korban Pesach, like I said. And before chatzos, likewise, you midarais, at least midarabana, we know we have to get rid of the chametz earlier than chatzos. If that's the case, then why, you could say, you know, there's no, but it just adds an extra level of severity. It's not really creating an independent requirement. So Lu Yitzuyer, if you would think, say, that you could possibly shech the Korban Pesach before Chatzos, then you would have to get rid of your chametz before the time that you wanted to shech the Korban Pesach, but anyway, it's impossible, so. Even though you technically, theoretically, could shech it right after Chatzos, really, you're only supposed to do the tamid shalbein harbayim, the second daily offering first, and only after that do you do the korban pesach. We know that the earliest time for shechting the tamid shalbein harbayim is half an hour after chatzos, which is equivalent to our time of mincha gedola. That's where we get it from. So that was the earliest they ever used to shecht the korban tamid shalbein harbayim, the second daily offering, because we had an extra half hour. Because you shouldn't make any mistake of doing it before midday. So you want to make 100% sure it's after midday. So you shecht the tamid shalbein harbayim at the earliest half an hour after chatzos. So it's a question: is that an absolute rule, or is it only a harchaka? Is it only some sort of fence around the midday to make sure that you actually get it after midday? And what's the nafkamina? What's the for us? What is the difference between these two? With these two possibilities. So what happened, we know you're not supposed to daven mincha before mincha gedola, because that was the earliest time they used to shecht the second daily offering. But what happens if you make a mistake and you daven mincha after midday, but before mincha gedola, after midday, but before half an hour after midday? So are you yotze b'dieved, because when it's push comes to shove, you did daven after chatzos, you did not make the mistake? Or is it an absolute rule that the earliest time is half an hour after midday, and there is no wiggle room? So that's a disagreement amongst the poskim. I think the achar shemaktir miktora shalbein arvayim, again, after you offer the incense of the afternoon, v'gam la'achar shemeite besaneros, again, you fix the candles. The menorah, the Yeser Prateh, the rest of the details, B'Psachim, they're all found in the fifth parak of P'sachim, which most people skip, because it's all talking about the Korban, but you should learn it. Most people do the first three or four chapters, then skip straight to the 10th chapter, which discusses the Seder. Okay? It applies to both men and women, because obviously women are also obligated to observe the Korban Pesach, so all the prohibitions of the Korban Pesach are applicable to women as well. If you violate this mitzvah and you know that you have a kezayis, again, we need a shear, we need an olive's bulk of chametz at home while you offer your Korban Pesach. If you do it knowingly, echad shochet ozorik, whether you slaughter or sprinkle the blood, or makdir ha'imurin, or you put the parts of the korban that are burnt on the altar, or afil echad mikol b'nei achavura nim hanim b'achilasa loke, and if any of even one of the people who's planning to eat this korban pesach, anyone who's involved in this production receives the penalty of lashes. Pesach kosher mikol makom. Even so, it does not invalidate the korban pesach. So if you did it, you receive the penalty of malchus. But you could still eat the Korban Pesach, that particular Korban Pesach. Mitzvah Tzadi, the 90th mitzvah, Shelo Naniach Imurei HaPesach Limpasel Belina. We should not allow the parts of the offering that are burnt on the altar to become invalid due to Lina, due to spending the night. Shelo Lahaniach Imurin Shel Pesach Ad HaBoker Shelo Yakrivu Oso. That you should not allow them to rest the night until the morning. You rather you have to offer them immediately. And this is called nosar. You know, it's a famous prohibition that if you leave something till after the proper time for offering it, then it's called nosar. Shenemar, leftover thing. Shenemar velo yolin chelev chagi ad boker. You shall not let the fat of my festival offering rest until the morning. The who hadin l'shari murin l'shar karbanos, all the rest of the karbanos as well, the stuff that's supposed to be burnt on the altar should be done immediately. The loshen mechilta, the loshen of the halachic medrash on Shmos, lo yolin chile ba'akas lamin al chalavim shenifsalim belina. So telling you that the fats are also puzzle when you leave them over the night. This is again expressed in another place. Shneamar v'lo yolin chilev chagi aboker, again a little bit not so far off. That lo yolin laboker chzeva chag haPesach. You shall not let the Pesach offering go until the morning. Mishor she haMitzvah is the reasoning. Ki kavod haKorban laKriva bismano haKavuei lav. You're supposed to do it in the proper time. It was the sacrifice in the proper time. It's not appropriate. I don't feel like it right now. The amavir haMoed v'nira kimisiyah shemashlech haDover acharei gevo. If you go later than it's supposed to be, it looks like you don't really care about it. You're just casting it aside. And it's not the real point of karvanos, as I've explained a few times, is that you're supposed to have, it's supposed to influence you to have proper karvanos and to influence you positively in terms of your worship of gods. If you didn't internalize the message, what's the point of karvanos? You just say, oh, I'm going to slaughter the sheep and I'll get around to make makar of the emurim whenever I feel like it. That's not totally inappropriate. That's totally the opposite karvana than what you're supposed to have. That's why they become puzzle if you do that. Midine ha-mitzvah, the lochos of the mitzvah, mash'omru, she-mitzvah, akter emurei, kol zebach v'zebach b'fnei atzmo. You're supposed to burn the entrails each individually, not mix them up all together. Mash'omru, she-mitzvah, haktaros, and achar shechita samuch. You should do it as soon as possible after the slaughtering. V'im lo hikter kein, maktiran kol ha-layla, at-shiyala, amud ha-shachar. If you didn't do it then you can go the whole night until daybreak. That, by the way, is the why we have the tefillah of Maariv is based on this principle that there were no korbanos. The Gemara talks about how there were no korbanos during night. So how can we have tefillah Maariv? We know that each tefillah it was established because of a particular korban. No korbanos at night. So the tefillah Maariv, the nighttime prayer, is based on this idea that all the stuff that's supposed to be burnt on the Mizbeach that you didn't do it during the day, you could still do it during the night, and it doesn't become possible until the next day. That's why we have a nighttime prayer as well. So if the Pesach is on Shabbos, that means the Pesach is sacrificed on Shabbos, the 14th of Nisan. As we know, for all purposes, basically, the korban of korban Pesach is offered on Shabbos the same as on weekdays, because we know that korbanos in general cast aside the Shabbos, they supersede the Shabbos. Shechel ve Shabbos kareivim biyantif. That since Yantif, which is the following night, obviously the Shabbos is erev Pesach, then Yontif is Saturday night, the first night of Pesach. So since the Korban was shechted on Shabbos, so then Shabbos is holier than Yontif, then you're allowed to burn the Emurim of the Korban of Shabbos the following night, even though it's Yontif. However, but if Erev Pesach is on a regular weekday, ein maktirin b'layla, because the Emurim of the Korban Pesach didn't have sufficient holiness because they were not slaughtered on Shabbos. So it's only if they're slaughtered on Shabbos that you can burn them on Yontif, because you know you're not allowed to just burn things on Yontif for no reason. Here you're supposed to do it, but you could have done it earlier. You're supposed to do it right after the Shlita. Shein makdirin chel bechol beYontif, but you can't because the burning of the Emurim, the fats of a weekday, do not supersede Yontif. The Yontif asei velos asei. Yontif is a positive and a negative commandment that you should rest on Yontif and you should not do melach on Yontif. V'dochel avdelo yalin. So since there, you could start discussing if it was just one of the two, then we have here a lav that you're not allowed to leave the Emurim until the next day. And we have only one prohibition associated with Yontif. So maybe the idea that you're not allowed to let the Emurim rest until the next day would supersede Yontif. That's not the case, because Yontif is extra severe because there's a positive and negative prohibition associated with it. We discussed a couple weeks ago the idea of what happens when you have a conflict between two different mitzvos and where one supersedes the other. So we mentioned how when there's a mitzvah, a positive and a negative commandment associated with a mitzvah, so it's much harder to supersede that than if there's only one. V'docha lav d'lo yalin, v'yeser prateh, the rest of the details, v'psachim, again, in the tractate v'psachim, makes sense. V'noeges v'zman abayis v'zcharim kohanim. This only applies to kohanim, because they're the ones who are burning the emurim. So all of us here don't have to ever worry about violating this prohibition. V'noeges v'zman habayis v'ha'over v'lo hikrivan ein oloke lefi she'ein b'maisa. If you just didn't offer the emurim, then you do not receive the penalty of lashes because there's no ma'aseh, you just didn't do something. It's an error of omission, not an error of commission. Mitzvah Tzadi Aleph, the 91st mitzvah. Mitzvahs Havas Bikurim, the mitzvah bringing of the first fruits. Lahavi Bikurim La Mikdash, to bring your first fruits to the temple. Du'a Priya Rishon Shemizbashel Be'ilon, the first fruit that ripens on the tree. Shechayavin Anu La'avio Sham Velitno La'kohanim. That we have to bring it there to the Beis HaMikdash and give it to the priest. V'lo kol ha'ilonos v'mitzvah zo min ha'Torah. That this, not all types of fruit are required, you're required to bring Bikurim from them. Ela Shiva Saminim. We know there are not that many times halacha where the famous Shiva Saminim, the seven species that Eretz Yisrael was specifically blessed with, really has a halachic significance. But here is one. Bilvach and Shtapcha Haaretz Bohem, that the land was specifically praised regarding the produce of these kinds. Ve'machita Usaora, the wheat and barley, Gefen, grapes, Uteina, figs, Verimo and pomegranates, Zaysim, olives, and tamarim and dates. By the way, you could all these two things, and there are two of them that you're allowed to bring as a liquid, and not as a fruit necessarily. And those are the grapes and the olives. That on the Torah level, the only mashke, the only liquid that comes out of certain fruits that retains the status of a pri, that retains the status of the fruit itself, are grapes and olives. Because grapes, the main point of grapes is to make wine from. The main point of olives is to make oil from, not to eat plain. You could eat. Same with the bracha, that the bracha on, normally when you squeeze a certain fruit, then the juice is shahakol, because it doesn't retain the status of fruit at all. Not bari priha anything. But not only does the juice of grapes retain the bracha, but it has its own bracha. It has a special bracha because it's more chashuv than even the other fruits. And there are certain cases where you make a bari priyats on olive oil, but normally you don't make a bari priyats on olive oil when you eat it plain, because it's not considered edible. But if you mix it with vegetable soup or something, but the main point is you want to drink the oil, but you just add some soup to flavor it, then you would make a bari priyats on the olive oil. Some people say also, by the way, that nowadays, that since there are a lot of fruit that's specifically grown for its juice, so you would make a bari priyats on the juice. Others say no, that's a specific Torah rule. It's an absolute Torah rule that only juice that comes out of grapes and olives has the status of a fruit. Otherwise, it's considered just something that comes out of it, but not the fruit. So we have the bracha of shakal. But there are post game hold that orange juice nowadays has bari priya eitz. Because
are there actually and still poskim who hold that grape juice is a shakal? There's that very much minority opinion.
Grape juice is a shahakol. The only reason grape juice would be a shahakol is if it can't turn into wine.
Oh, yes, right. Yeah, right. We went through that once. Yes.
Freshly squeezed grape juice is certainly bari priya gefen. Because the Gemara says in Bava Basra that you can make kiddush on freshly squeezed grape juice. The only shaila is if you do stuff to it that makes it, according to some, that if you do something to it that prevents it from ever turning into wine, then it's a shahakol. Shenemar, Reishis bikurei admascha tavi, that the first fruits of your land you shall bring. Uba perus shelo nemar al shiva perus elu. That the Chazal decided that this meant that these bikurei admascha, the fruits of your land, that the specific, again, there had to be some reason why these seven things were specifically mentioned in the Torah. They just said, oh, it's nice, Eretz Yisrael. There has to be, we assume that there has to be some halachic reason, so it makes sense that it has to do with bikurim. That the way they learned this out, right, specifically these fruits that are mentioned in the Torah, and since it didn't explain, it just said, first bring your first fruit, so it must be these pears. So it must be that the fruits that the Torah specifically singled out as being good for, that Eretz Yisrael is good producing them, then it must be those fruits that you have to bring bikurim from. Baal Osan Sivanu, he commanded us regarding those fruits they mentioned explicitly. Maybe they had another reason to interpret it this way. Oshema divrei kabbalah, maybe it's simply a received traditional interpretation. V'chein hayadarkam lahavi osan, asmuchim l'Yerushalayim, evin osam rakim, harchokim miyabshin osam. It depends on how close you are to Yerushalayim when you brought your bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash. If you lived really close to Yerushalayim, you could bring fresh fruit, and if you live far away from Yerushalayim, and they would spoil before you got to Yerushalayim, if you just brought it fresh, then they used to dry them, used to make raisins out of the grapes and dried figs, etc. That before we get happy about, oh, we have a beautiful new crop of fruit, we have to think about God. That it's through God that we receive all the blessings. We have to bring to God's servants who are attending his house, so to speak, the first fruits. We bring the fruits of the Beis HaMikdash. We say, we accept his kingship, and we admit, and we thank God for that, for all the blessings that he's bestowed on us. And he's the source of all goodness. Again, we have this concept that's common in Sefer Chinuch. They have to show ourselves worthy of blessing. That's sort of an automatic thing that when you recognize God's kingship, then you are sort of make yourself automatically worthy of receiving blessing. Midine amitzvah d'alachos ma'ase amar zichrona levracha shehin asurin lazar ketruma mishanichnasu Yerushalayim, that the peros become holy, that can only be eaten by kohanim once they enter the walls of Yerushalayim. Umeza peros mevi'in meham bikurim midrabanan, which fruits are you required to bring bikurim midrabanan? So the commentaries say they don't understand this at all, because there are no species of fruits that are required to bring midrabanan. So probably what the Sefer Chinuch means here is there are certain areas of land that are required mikor midrabanan. So like Syria, for example, Syria and the other parts that are not technically Eretz Yisrael midaraisa, you have to bring bikurim from there midrabanan. V'shenitanin habikurim l'anshei mishmar, that the people who happen to be on duty, the kohen who happen to be on duty, have the rights of the bikurim when you bring them. V'shetunim kli, you have to bring them in a vessel. You can't just carry a bunch of grapes. And if it's a simple vessel, like a basket made of plant or a wooden thing, then you have to give the kohanim the vessel. But if you are very rich and you want to beautify your bikurim and you bring it in some very precious, fancy, golden kli studded with jewels, then you don't have to give it to the kohanim. You're not supposed to just jumble up all the fruits you're supposed to, it says that some people used to make layers of dry leaves between each type, so they shouldn't damage each other, shouldn't rub off on each other. And you're supposed to adorn it with extra grape clusters, just to make it as pretty as possible. Kion shemesh, oh, it says this. Shemesh shemhutzen o alin basal bein kolmin. I mean, right, you make a separation between each type. Umaki vashkol is anovin lasal shaltenim al sfaso. Let's say you're bringing figs, then it apparently makes figs look prettier when they're surrounded by grape clusters. Umevin torim of the yona lichvoda bikurim. You bring also birds as an additional present for the kohanim. Venosin also the kohanim. That makes, again, it makes them extra excited to receive the bikurim. The chetzar hayu mahalin, because fruit, okay, but meat. The chetzar hayu mahalin osam, how they used to bring it, they used to, you know, dance or whatever. The simcha sheyosin aleim, they used to be very happy about it. Oshin ayosim likrosam, and people used to come greet them, and the vamizwarim sheyokorin samochleir, and they would sing various sections of Tehillim as they approached Yerushalayim. The Yisr Proteh, the rest of the details, Midvarim Maseches Bikurim, of course, is not in the Talmud Bavli, but we have Mishnayos, we have Tosefta, we have Talmud Yerushalmi, so if you're ever interested in really delving into laws of Bikurim, then that's the right place to look. V'noheges b'zman habayis b'zcharim u'v'peros Eretz Yisrael v'suria v'ever ayardein. In time is the Beis HaMikdash with males. So why should it be, right, in this commentary he asks, why should it be specifically males? Not exactly clear.
Apparently the Mishnah does list women as those as being required to bring the Purim from the
right.
But it's a drabbanan.
The Mishnah Lamelech says, Lo matzasi din zeh mevor, right? But the divrei ha-mechaber tzarech lomar d'mevi'in mid'rabbanan. But that's not the Mishnah, that doesn't say explicitly. That's what he's assuming the Sefer HaChinuch holds.
Yeah.
Right, but again, he seems to be a das yachid, fine. Mm-hmm. But Chinuch is in fact a das yachid in this matter, apparently. Yeah. Other people that women do have to bring. Fine. Event, so it applies to Eretz Yisrael, of course, midaraisa, and Surya, and Eber Hayard, and midarabanan. V'valo b'peros chutzlaretz, even in any place in chutzlaretz, you don't have to schlep them on a plane to Israel and go to the Beis HaMikdash, where there hasn't, since plans have been invented, there hasn't been no Beis HaMikdash, fine. V'valo b'peros, v'over ala b'italasei. And if you violated it, then you neglected to perform a positive commandment. Mitzvah tzadi bein shlo nevashal basar b'chalav. Not to cook meat and milk together. Shlo nevashal basar behema b'chalav. We should not cook the meat of a domesticated animal in milk. Right, the other animals, wild animals, and birds are only derabanan deraisa. The prohibition only applies. Okay, well, cooking. I'm sorry, that's eating, but cooking you may be allowed. Shenemar lo sevashal gedi b'chalev imo, you shall not cook a kid in its mother's milk. Uva perush de lav davka gedi, not specifically a goat, a kid. El afilu kol besar behema b'mashma, any meat of a domesticated animal. Shein loshen gedi el loshen behema, that kid here does not refer specifically to a goat, but to a domesticated animal. Hotzio b'loshen gedi lefisha basar devar rach gedi. The reason, because domesticated animal meat is soft like a kid, and not, as opposed to wild animal meat, which I guess is tougher. V'eich ata lo meikein, how do you know that? Mima she'ata motzi b'chama v'heim makomos b'tara shekosu gedi v'utzorach lefarash gedi izim. So how do you know that here gedi is not specifically a goat kid? Because sometimes it says specifically gedi izim, gedi of goats. So if that's the case, so if it just says gedi, then it's not necessarily a goat. Alamanta b'shemakom shnemar gedi stam, in a place where it just says gedi, lav davke gedi izim, el af kol besar behema v'kayotzi bo b'mashma. It includes any meat of a domesticated animal. Mishor shemitzvah zoh, the reasoning behind this mitzvah is what? Lefi adome shewinyin, kinyi mashe kesad mitzvah mechashefa. That is just like when we talked about the witch, the sorceress. Sometimes the combination of different things causes damage in the world, and exactly what that means, some sort of metaphysical thing. Meat and milk together is one of these things. That if you cook meat and milk together, it just causes damage. The two things are not supposed to be together. It's like kilayim. It's like... Yeah, like Shana is too. It's two things that just don't belong together, so they create problems. Uktas Rael is Elefisha Baha Isr Lana Bamaisa Taroves Avalpish Lanochlenu. that the reason it's a proof for my reasoning is because we're not allowed to cook it together even if we don't eat it. So not that it causes damage just by eating, it's just that the two things don't belong together at all. It's not because the eating is damaging to us. Rather, we should just not do it because we want to avoid all damage that the meat and milk together might cause. And in other places, that even if we do make this mixture inappropriately, so we still, there's a specific prohibition, as we'll see a little bit later in the Torah, in a couple places, we have three times we know this prohibition appears in the Torah, that one is for cooking, one is for eating, and one is for deriving benefits. So even if you happen to cook it together, you still have to get rid of it, you're not allowed to derive benefit from it, you're not allowed to eat it. To make dog food, yeah, absolutely.
Or to use food that has milk and meat.
Yeah, that's a problem. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Leherche ka'inyan. So this gets to the fact that we're not allowed to eat it or derive benefit from it, gets the whole idea farther from us. If you eat it without deriving any benefit from it whatsoever, then you still receive the penalty of lashes. Like if you're completely stuffed to the gills and you're completely disgusted by this cheeseburger, you still receive the penalty of lashes, which is not necessarily the case by other things, other types of forbidden foods. Masha'in kein b'shar kol yisuri ha'macholos, this does not apply to the rest of the forbidden foods. V'chol zeh morashi yisod tamahu machmas ha'tarovas. That again, this is a proof to me that this whole issue is only because of that the mixture is problematic. Same way as with kishuf, with sorcery, that's kind of the idea is that you shouldn't be mixing things that don't belong together. That this, I'm saying this because I'm not really sure. I'm just being pressured. I have to say something in my section of Mishtar Shea Mitzvah, but we still need to know what's going on. The Rambam Zichron Alvracha Kosov B'tam Ach Binyan Tam Acher. He gave a different reason, famous reason of the Rambam. Amar Kiyush Ovdei Avodah Zarah Yavdua B'Maisa Taroves Basar Machalav. That there used to be people worshipped Avodah Zarah by mixing meat and milk. So Lachain Hirchika Tarosanu Oso Taroves V'Chol Zeinenu Shaveli. That I don't like this. I don't like that reason because he likes more universalistic reasons, I guess. Rather than one specific Avodah Zarah once had Basar B'cholav used to worship it, so Dini HaMitzvah Nichto Bezrus Hashem. I'm not going to tell you the halachos right now. B'kitzur K'minageinu. I mean, I'm going to tell you briefly. Like I normally say, but not here. B'mitzvah Zisra Achilu V'ana B'seder Kisisa. That when I talk about the prohibition of eating Basar B'cholav and deriving benefit from Basar B'cholav, then I will explain the halachos. I, of course, he's going to explain over there. Not specifically. He explained over here that it's not specifically a kid. But he didn't explain specifically that it's not the mother's milk either, that it's any milk. He didn't explain how the process of that worked. Yeah, because Dibra Kosu Behova, it says that's what they used to do. It's mentioned that specifically. We have this many times in the Torah and in Chazal, that it just talked about the normal situation, but it didn't mean to limit the prohibition to that situation, yeah? Fine. V'noeges b'chol mokom v'chol zman v'zchor m'kevos applies to men and women, all places, all times. Over alei v'vishal basar v'cholav, afal pishal v'acholon loke. Even if you didn't eat it, you just cooked it together, you receive the penalty of lasha. That's why also it could be problematic for a Jew to be a chef in a non-kosher restaurant.
Yeah.
Even if you're certainly not eating the food, but you're not allowed to cook meat and milk together. Mitzvah Tzadi Gimel 93. Shelo lichros bris l'shiva amamim v'chol l'chein l'chol ovid avodah zarah, not to make a covenant with the seven nations or to any worshiper of Avodah Zarah. Shelo nichros bris. We should not make a covenant. Shaloma kelomar shelo navtiach ba'avoseinu. We should not guarantee our love, which is an interesting way to phrase it. El ha'am ha'ra ha'kofrim shem shiva amamim. The bad nations, the seven nations, shebatorah shu machzikim ba'arzeinu terem bo'enu sham, who used to live in our land before we got there. Ve'enechiti va'amori va'achivi va'girgashi va'yevusi, etc. All these nations, shenemar, lo sichros lohem v'leloheyem bris. You shall not make a covenant with them or with their gods. Kelomar shalonase imoim shalom v'naniach osam la'avodah zarah. We shall not make peace with them and let them worship Avodah Zarah. So in other words, we come and they'll conquer the land. The seven nations say, please don't conquer us. you know, we'll guarantee peace, we'll make a peace treaty with you, but we're going to continue with our Avodah Zarah. So you're not allowed to do that. The peace, one of the conditions of the peace treaty has to be that they stop worshipping Avodah Zarah. Mishor she mitzvah zo, one of the reasoning for this mitzvah is, la'abed Avodah Zarah v'chol m'sham sh'amin olam. We have to get rid of Avodah Zarah from the world. Ve'elu ha'shiva amim mihayu ikra Avodah Zarah v'yisod ha'rishon. They're the main progenitors of Avodah Zarah. That's where it rests, really, the spirit of Avodah Zarah. Nekru Maritzam. They, for that reason, they were removed from their land. Well, their land, which is ours now. Minstavinu l'sharish achareim l'abed zichram l'olam. We have to uproot them and to get rid of their memory forever. Chmoshegosuv aleim b'torah achareim tachareim. We should completely destroy them, and it says in the Torah, v'mitzvah sasei b'seder v'aschanon. It's a little bit later. It's a mitzvah 425. Got a ways to go. V'sham, arich v'mitzvah be'ezras Hashem. I'm going to explain in greater detail over there. V'nagit tziva seyos ba'olam ha'omos aras lama. Why are these evil nations in the world? Why does God want that to be? V'chi mitzvah zo b'chla ha'mitzvahs ha'noagos. And this mitzvah is included in the mitzvahs that are practiced. Min ha'azhara b'hem nishma azhara shalo nichros bris l'chol of the avodah zarah. So not only them, we're not allowed to make a covenant with any worship, idol worshippers. Aval yesh chiluk bein shiva amim l'shar ha'umos of the Avodah Zarah. The difference between the seven nations and the rest of the nations who worship Avodah Zarah is as follows. Ki shar ha'umos, imei nilchamen imalu, ein mitzvah aleinu lahargam, elo shalo yeshu b'artzeinu ad shiyazu Avodah Zarah. That if they're in their the other nations, if they're just happily in India, or in whatever country worshipping Avodah Zarah, and they're not making war with Israel, then we don't have to fight with them at all. But the seven nations who are going to be really, really pestering to us, they're going to attack us, they're going to influence us to worship Avodah Zarah, they have claims to our land. So them, we have to completely destroy unless they agree to abandon their idolatry, in which case we can let them be. V'inyan lefit sheheim hayu ikra Avodah Zarah v'yisod ha'rishon. They're the main progenitors of Avodah Zarah. They're the most easily, they're the strongest about it. So they're going to influence us. They're going to cause problems down the line. And sort of inappropriate, you could say, you know, well, we'll have mercy on them now, but down the line, that's going to cause even greater problems for us. So you see, now you have to get rid of the threat for later. As I wrote, that if you, again, lo sichros, so this is a law, this is a negative commandment, that if somebody, if you have the ability to kill such a person and without danger to yourself, and you don't, then you violated this negative commandment. But if you're obviously not required to, if you happen to find yourself in a Jebusite village, and you have a gun and you start shooting people, you don't have to end that, but there are hundreds of them and there's only one of you, so not obviously it doesn't make sense to risk your life to kill them. But if you're in a position to do it without danger to yourself, then you have to do it. If the other idol worshippers, if they don't fight with us, then we don't have to kill them. Dafka of the Avodah Zarah mina umos. That means non-Jewish of the Avodah Zarah. Aval Yisrael of the Avodah Zarah. But if a Jew worships idolatry, kigon haminim v'hameshumadim v'hapikorsim. Not specifically people who are worshiping Avodah Zarah even necessarily, but people who deny the principles of Jewish faith. Mitzvah leinu lahorgam. We should kill them. They cause problems for Israel. Not talking about people who are just not observant, not religious, or whatever, but people who are actively trying to subvert the Jewish religion. Then we should kill them. Amutav yovdu elef keyutzi bohem. Rather, 1,000 of them should be destroyed. Below Yisrael echad kosher, and not one kosher Jew. In other words, they have to make sure they don't have influence over the Jews. I don't know, but it should be emphasized, certainly, of course, that saying does not apply to regular, non-observant Jews, not people living nowadays. Absolutely not, but it applies to people who are trying to subvert the Jewish faith. Yeah. Masha Amru, Shemekablin Osa, Nimratzu Lachzer, Betshuva, V'yaser Potem, V'ar Mesanedrin. So if they want to engage in repentance, then that's good. And the rest of the details are explained in Sanhedrin. Fine, let's make Mitzvot Tzadi Dalad, 94. Shelo Hoshiv Oved Avodah Zarah Be'Artzeinu. Shelo L'Shaken Avodah Zarah Be'Artzeinu. We should not allow an altar in our land. Shenemar Lo Yeshuv Be'Artzecha Pen Yachtir Oskali. Then lest they turn you astray from me. It says explicitly here, I don't have to conjecture about the reason for the mitzvah, because it says explicitly in the Pasuk. What does it say? So we shouldn't learn from their denial of God and follow their ways. The luchos of the mitzvah, if they wanted to get rid of their avodah zarah, to leave it, even though they did it originally, then they're allowed to live in Eretz Yisrael. V'zeu shenikra ger toshav. That ger toshav really is somebody who accepts the seven mitzvos of Bnei Noach, but here he's going to give, speaking in more general terms, that may be even not specifically technically a ger toshav, but even somebody who just renounces Avodah Zarah completely is allowed to live in the land of Israel. Shkolomar shehu ger leinian shehu tar leisha v'artzenu, he's allowed to live in the land of Israel. Kimo she'amru zichron levracha ezu ger toshav, what's a ger toshav? It's a kibol shelo lavo devodah zara. Now again, really we assume that ger toshav is the real ger toshav is somebody who accepts shev mitzvot bnei Noach, but here it seems to be some sort of a lesser category of somebody who just accepts not to worship avodah zara, so he's allowed to live in Eretz Yisrael even if he's not Jewish. So certainly, if he's worshipping Avodah Zarah, then you're not allowed to sell him, and certainly even, you're not allowed to rent him, and certainly not even to sell him land in the land of Israel. Again, this is part of the problem of the Hetar Mechira that we discussed the other days, but which is alleviated by the fact that he sold to a Muslim who's not an Avodah Zarah. Kolzman sheyiskor ledira, that any time that he rents it out in order to live there, because then he's going to bring Avodah Zarah into the house. Losavi tov al v'secher, now to bring Avodah Zarah into a house that you into a house. V'shemachnis sham Avodah Zarah, aval eschoroso mutar. If you just he buys it as an investment or something, then you're allowed. Eventually, yaskir l'shlosha b'nei adam. Then you're not, just as long as you don't rent out to three people, because then it's like v'shemachnis dvar kviyusu. It's more like a set, entrenched thing. V'ein roi l'kovam. You're not supposed to make them entrenched in the land. Even if they're just buying the property for investment purposes. V'chiluk adin and shamiz zechon avracha, sheish b'inyan zeh b'in batim l'sado, suchramim, that generally fields are there's a difference between fields and houses, uchramim b'in suria l'eretz Yisrael, then you're allowed to sell them houses in Syria, but not fields. The difference is less severe in general between when it's Surya, which is only Eretz Yisrael Midor Rabbanan. The answer, Proteh, the rest of the details, Midvarim B'Sanhedrin, Avodah Zarah, and Chutzlaretz, even in Chutzlaretz, I don't think you're allowed to sell a house to somebody who worships Avodah Zarah, but I have to check on that in terms of Halacha L'maisa nowadays. The Regis B'Zacharim Unikevos, Ba'aretz, this is in the land of Israel, in males and females, over Aleo Macharlem Karka, Oscharulem, B'Makom Shina Rashai. If you inappropriately sell land or rent land at a place where you're not allowed, Avraham mitzvahs melech, you violated the commandment of God. Veino loke, you don't receive the penalty. Elijah, the visha efshar limkor lem karko lhasker below asiyas maisa. That since sometimes there's no action associated with the sale, and therefore you would not, there's a lav shleim b'maisa, and you don't receive the penalty of lashes for it.